Welcome to IDTNT number 1018. I am currently in Washington, D.C., performing at the D.C. Improv shows Friday, September 6th, Saturday, September 7th. DCImprov.com, I believe, is the ticket link. And then next week I'll be at the Chicago Improv in Schaumburg, Illinois. And then a couple weeks after that, October 3rd through 5th, at Caroline's in New York. So if you go to id10t.com/tour, you'll see ticket links there. There's upcoming shows in Irvine and Tacoma. So get ticket links there. And while you're there, go to id10t.com/signup for updates on stuff. We are finally launched a bunch of new stuff at the ID10T store. There's some great Pickle Rick stuff. There's some Rick and Morty stuff. There's some horror socks in there. Exorcist, Beetlejuice, Gremlins, some zombie phone cases, and a lot of fun stuff. I just kind of want to make stuff that I want to own. And then in the process, I will share some of that with people on the website. There's also a new ID10T podcast t-shirt up with the logo that's on iTunes. So, you know, go check it out. We'd appreciate it. Keeps this rickety boat afloat. And also, I want to say that if you have an event or thing that you want to promote, by all means, events at id10t.com would be the way to reach out for that. Just like Matthew Padilla, who writes, "I recently separated from the Air Force and decided to try my hand at writing children's books. I deemed it appropriate to turn to the corkboard, considering how influential ID10T has been in regards to acting on my creative inclinations. I listened to your show heavily during deployments, and it spurred me to start a podcast, perform at open mics, and write this book. The book in question is called Playing Possum. The O is important when searching, so just, you know, opossum. All sales will ultimately fund the sequel. I thought it best that the next book be supported financially via the first, as opposed to Kickstarter or something similar, which is a very smart thing to do. As a new author, I welcome any and all feedback to the Amazon page so I may continue to grow and learn. Thanks, Matthew." That is a very inspiring story, and incredible that, I don't know, it just, Matthew, it sounds like your head's in the right place with all this stuff, so I support what you're doing. Amanda writes, "I just want to let you know about a great tabletop game that a cool dude in my quaint little city of Huntsville, Alabama has made. It's called Hedgelord. It's a competitive maze puzzle game where you have to get your character and beast companion through the maze while avoiding and blocking other characters and their beast companions. Oh, and dragons, because why not dragons? The game was designed and is built by Dustin Timbrook and some other local artist buddies here in Huntsville. Follow Dustin on Instagram at Dustin Timbrook. The link for his store is in the bio. You can pre-order your copy of Hedgelord or buy some cool apparel. Keep in mind, there's a waiting period for the game because he is making them by hand." Oh, I love hearing stuff like that. "All this by his lonesome, with a little help from his totally rad wife when she's not at her day job." So well done to Amanda. And again, it's so inspiring and so delightful to hear that people are out there making their own stuff and that they have the means to get it out to other people in the world in our fabulous digital age. So events at id10t.com would be the way to reach out for that. This episode is Cedric Yarbrough, who you probably know from Reno 911. He's been in a million things he's an incredible sketch performer, like one of the best improvisers. He's in one of my favorite movies of all time, Black Dynamite. Of course, he was in the ABC show Speechless, which was an incredible show that sadly is not coming back. And when we recorded this, it was right before we found out that they announced that it wasn't coming back. So if you're like, why didn't they talk about Speechless not coming back? Well, that's why, because we didn't know when we recorded this. But if you want to see Cedric live, he has a monthly show at Groundlings with a bunch of other insanely brilliant performers called The Black Version. The next one is Monday, September 16th at 8 p.m. Jordan Black, Danielle Gaither, Phil Lamar is in that too. And it's directed by a lady who was my instructor at the Groundlings years ago when I thought I might try improvising. But it was her name's Karen Mariyama, and she is also phenomenal. So the Black Version monthly show at the Groundlings, if you're in Los Angeles, go check it out. And you can go to groundlings.com to get tickets and info on that. And thanks to Cedric for being on. And now, without further ado, let us roll the thing.
Initiating ID10T protocol. Have you had a job that when you were doing it, like the schedule was so grueling, but then afterwards you just missed it?
Yeah, all of them are. They're all like that. Like Reno was, you know, crazy hours. You know, I just wrapped Speechless, and we're there sometimes 14, 15 hour days, and I'm just exhausted. Just, I can't think anymore at the end of the day. And, you know, we're a couple weeks out, and I'm missing everyone already. You know, already I'm just like, God, where are those guys? What's Minnie Driver doing right now? I need to call her up. And
it's a great thing about social media is you can just follow everyone's life. You can follow a version of everyone's on Instagram.
Yeah. I didn't realize how many lies are going on Instagram. Because my life is really fucking cool. I love my life.
Yeah.
And everyone, I guess, is kind of faking the funk on Instagram. I guess if that's the thing about, like, well, we're lying. But this isn't as – it's not as glamorous as we're making.
As long as you're liking the pictures, then it's okay. The lie is justified.
I guess.
Because ultimately I'm getting this basically cerebral drug, this fake thing.
This fake thing,
it is kind of a strange – and I honestly think that if likes were generated by different types of behaviors, people would alter their behaviors to get the – that's the one thing about it that sort of scares me is that it does – it creates a loop where I think people are chasing a thing and they will do whatever they need to do.
To do it, to get it, to get those likes. And it's – I mean where would these models go?
What did Instagram models do before Instagram?
I don't know.
Who was going to party with people in branded events at Coachella?
At Coachella. Like, where were they twerking before Instagram? Man?
Where were Instagram models posing on yachts before? Were they still doing that? And just no one was documenting it?
If an Instagram model twerks in a forest.
Yeah. It's a time old. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Buddha sat for months ruminating on that very idea.
God.
If an Instagram model is twerking and no one is there to post it. It may not actually exist.
It does not get liked. So how the hell are you? You good?
Everything, I'm good, yeah.
Life
yeah,
is good?
Everything's good.
Yeah, you look well.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that beard is good. You got a good beard, too.
I'm trying to fill it in.
It's a good TV beard as well. Like, I see, like, look at this guy. He's got...
I tried to get a little fancy with it, though, like a week ago. It was really coming in nice, and I tried to do a thing where I made the sides a little bit just to give it a taper so that it was longer at the chin.
Yeah.
And I don't really know how to use the guides on my beard trimmer.
Right.
And so I used too low of a guide on the sides, and then all of a sudden I looked like a dirty dude with a goatee. I just looked like a guy... I just look like a guy who'd be on like Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives or whatever, you know. Hey, so I'm making brisket today. Like I just looked like it just wasn't. So.
Are we making brisket today?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's the guy that you're asking? That's what I want to know. Who's that guy? The brisket maker.
So here's the scene that I was in my head but didn't come out of my performance was that I'm a dude who works out of a food truck like in rural Texas.
Gotcha.
And I'm just in a food truck all the time. I do have a goatee, but I haven't had time to shave, so everything else is kind of growing out.
Okay.
And so I just have that kind of like greasy white guy look.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. And then the other guy that the actual brisket maker that you're asking is the brisket ready.
Yeah.
His beard, he's got a good beard.
He's got a good beard. Yeah. I think goatees are the worst things to happen to men's faces.
Oh, yeah.
That, like, it's just not a good – there's something about it. I would almost rather have the old-timey – like that reverse one where it comes down here and then just goes up to the mustache but it's not on the chin or the neck.
Yeah, that dude.
Now all I'm thinking about is all the facial hair that was in the Pimp Council scene in Black Dynamite.
Oh, man, yes. I had one of those. That's what I had. I had that thing. And it's funny because that's what I do for – because I'd rather be clean shaven. I don't grow facial hair very
good. It looks good on you, though.
Here now, but for many years I looked like a catfish. Just on the sides. But I try now because for Hollywood, I don't think very many executives see black men without facial hair.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I usually don't. So I grow hair during pilot season just for, you know, just for to book jobs.
And does it
helps.
You know, it's kind of funny to think that with all the training and all the work and all of the improv experience.
Doesn't matter.
The important question is
the Shakespeare that I've you know, years and years, my degree in theater arts. None of that
matters.
Has he not
shaved in about 5 days?
I don't understand the black man without facial hair. What is that? I don't get it. Now, next.
No facial hair.
Phil Lamar. That now? Okay. Let's get Phil Lamar in here. He's got a good facial hair.
Phil's great.
No, Phil's the best.
I've known that guy forever. I did an episode of Mad TV in 96.
Oh, you did?
Okay. 96.
Uh-huh.
And I've known Phil since then, and all those
he's
Mad TV
fucking
folks.
Fantastic. I do a live show with him called the Black Version Show at the Groundlings Theater. We get a show or a movie, get a movie title, and then Silence of the Lambs, Star Wars, 16 Candles, whatever, and we improvise the Black Version of that.
When
movie.
Is that?
We do that once a month. We've been doing that once a month for 8 years now.
I really want to see that.
It's the best show in town.
Do you do like a straight hour long improv?
We'll do an hour long of that, and then for the movie, and then for the second act is the DVD extras. We'll do a deleted scene, a song that didn't make the soundtrack, an actor who auditioned for the movie that didn't make it, a product that we'd been placing within the movie the entire time.
That,
you know, it's...
You elevated that, because that was an amazing idea before, but that's a detail that is genius.
The DVD extras are probably it's better than the movie.
And I would encourage anyone to see long-form improv, because I think most people, when they think of improv, they'll think of Who's Line, or they think of quick games that are a little more joke-based. Mm-hmm. And long-form improv is really about long-form collaborative in-the-moment storytelling.
Listening, yes.
And it's in such an incredible thing to witness for that long. Because I would imagine at a certain point, people just forget that they're watching something that's improvised.
Right. No, they just they can't believe that we're making up this stuff. And sometimes it's just we've been at it for so long. It's just fun. Phil Lamar's in it. Jordan Black, who developed.
I know Jordan. This.
Yeah, Jordan is genius, brilliant. Gary Anthony Williams, Danielle Gaither. And,
she's great.
Yeah, she's also a Mad TV
Mad
alum.
TV, yep.
And Naima Funk, who was from Detroit and wonderful. And Jordan Peele and Keegan-Michael Key were a part of this group before they, went off and did their guys.
Did Jordan Peele end up doing anything else after?
I don't know what's going on with either of them. Keegan-Michael who?
I mean, did he end up becoming one of the most influential directors in Hollywood?
A guy who can open up a movie anytime he wants.
It's incredible.
Nicest
guys in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's so cool. I love that there's this kind of generation of like improv sketch kind of guys that are now it's kind of our turn to do some of this, get in where we fit in a little bit. A lot of times, especially with sketch and improv, it's like how are you going to make a living? how does that actually transfer into actually this business? And we see that a lot of these guys are now actually really making their niche. They're really figuring out a way to really contribute.
Well, the fundamentals of the skill sets that you learn doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that long form improv.
By the way, did we start?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're way in.
We're way in. Okay,
yeah, we're way in.
All right, we're just talking.
The fundamentals that you learn from that, because you are basically it's all storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You learn how to listen. You learn how to build characters quickly. You learn how to tell the best story in the simplest way that conveys to the audience the immediacy of the audience. And you also have to do all of the stuff around it. And so I really feel like for anyone who wants to learn how to sort of be like a multi-hyphenate in this business, you probably should have like improv, like
that
long-form improv training.
Yeah, it's also, just teaches you how to listen anyway and talk to people.
Yeah.
I think, a lot of us actors kind of are a little socially inept sometimes. And just being able to work well with others, just helps.
Well, we just have to get out of our own heads a little bit sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, like we gotta, and you have to, or the scene fails.
Definitely. And there's, and it's also, I love this thing about, I mean, there's definitely a difference between stand-up comedians and sketch funny folks. You know, the stand-up guys are, I think they're more the rock and roll type guys. And then the sketch guys are a little more, you know, they have homes and families and insurance and, you know, we got to worry about, you know, people's teeth. And,
well, I think,
you know,
I wonder if it's sort of the difference, also the difference between like solo rock star or like the Doobie Brothers, you know, where there's a bunch of them and they all tour and they support each other and they're all, you know, it's like they know how to be a group.
Right. And then there's Justin Timberlake.
Yeah. Stand-ups are just only children. Yeah.
We don't know how to work. We just want to do this. And sometimes we do too much coke and die.
I did Groundlings in like 96, 97.
Oh, you did. Okay.
And then I realized like, oh, I should just do stand-up. Because my improvs were all, I used to get called out for like, you know, they go too jokey, and I'm like, ugh,
I
gotta unlearn that if I'm gonna make this work, and I don't wanna, I'll just do stand up.
Yeah. And there's, I mean, they're both great, you know, they're both great genres, and, you know, I don't know, maybe I should do a documentary about that.
Well, stand up the thing that stand up doesn't do is that it doesn't teach you to, it doesn't automatically teach you to be collaborative. Mm-hmm. And sometimes stand-ups have trouble like making the jump to film or television or whatever because they're so used to their own voice, doing their own thing. They're really just sort of like a one-man – I mean, it's like a one-man band. You're a one-man marketer. You have to do you do everything yourself.
Let alone the acting aspect of it is not – it's jokes.
You're just you.
Yeah.
And but when you're in an improv group, you have to figure out how you fit in. Mm-hmm. You have to service the scene and not yourself.
Right.
And stand-up's goal is to service themselves.
Yes.
And the audience.
Yeah.
And so I think I personally think that, you know, improv training is more useful for so many different things, and stand-up really helps you be a stand-up.
Yes. Unless you get those that can do both, like the Eddie Murphys of the world, that are, you know, that were, you know, when he's on SNL, just killed it, and his you know, his stand-up was
pretty legendary. I wish he would
come back.
Yes, I mean, I'd heard he was toying with doing stand-up again,
mm-hmm.
but even if he didn't, it's just like, you know, like I watch Bowfinger, and I just wish. You know, rather than trying, and I mean, listen, if you're a super famous person and, you know, it's sort of part of your career DNA to be the star of a movie or the star of a franchise, but he is such a phenomenal actor.
Yeah.
Which people saw in Dreamgirls,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's like, but
I can really act.
I just wish he would just take parts regardless of the money or the notoriety, because mm-hmm. I just want to see his character work.
Yeah,
and not be like Eddie Murphy superstar.
Yeah, and we could pretend that we know his psyche and what. But what is it like? Are you afraid to fail? Are you scared to be, you know, vulnerable and maybe, you know, not be Eddie Murphy? You know, there's this thing about being cool. You got to be so fucking cool. I mean,
yeah, maybe
we all have that.
Maybe,
but
I don't know, or maybe it's also just that. You know, and he's still actually pretty young because he was like 19 when he was on SNL.
Yeah, yeah.
So he might be like 59, 50s, maybe, yeah. 58, 50s, 59. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, but also I'm sure there's like, it takes a lot of energy to go like build a character and, you know, and to him, who knows? But mm-hmm. maybe if it's not something that is going to blow up in a huge way, maybe it's like, I don't know, maybe I just want to be home with my kids.
Right.
Maybe I just don't need to, maybe doing stand-up, you know, it's an enormous amount of work, and for what? Like, mm-hmm. what's it? Like, what does he need to do that he hasn't done?
Right. Yeah.
So,
and then maybe it's fucking our fault, our problem. Like, maybe he's just happy. He doesn't need any of that.
He might not need any of it. He might be happy the way he is.
It's just us that we need this, but all of us do. We all want to see Eddie do.
I know, but in order to, and we're selfish that way. But in order to. I think in order to be a performer, you have to be hungry in some way.
Sure.
And it might be hungry for attention. It might be hungry for, because you need money. It might be hungry for the craft.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes when people are very comfortable,
yeah.
they're just like, you know, I'm not hungry. I don't need to go back to the dessert table. I feel fine.
I'm full.
Yeah.
I'm good. Push this table over. Push the plate to that side.
Maybe you need to write something and put
maybe.
It in there.
Maybe. Well, see, that's the other thing, too. That's, you know, I was watching Harlem Nights the other week. It's like, this generation needs one of those where we just get Keegan and Jordan and Cedric and Craig and everybody just in one stupid caper movie, you know.
I know a guy who could get that greenlit real fast.
Oh, yeah?
Mr. Jordan Peele.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. I forgot about him. That would be, you know, just some kind of a fun
I'll bet if you called up Jordan and said, hey, can we make our own version of Harlem Nights? He'd go, all right.
Okay.
I mean, and Let's he do, could do it.
Yeah. Yeah, he could do it.
That would be incredible.
We should come up with an idea, right? Something.
Maybe
Michael Jai White. I mean, Michael Jai White can write his ass off. And a lot of people don't know how brilliant that guy is. I mean,
Michael and Scott Sanders, I absolutely view Black Dynamite as, I mean, I put it up there with Groundhog Day, with Ghostbusters, with Back to the Future. I think it is one of the best comedies of comedy.
Yeah, yeah. It was one, I mean, I think it came out almost 10 years ago.
2009.
Now. Yeah.
It was 2009.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he'd been, you know, batting around that idea for a long time. And I think he wanted Quentin Tarantino to produce or help. And I think he helped in some regard, some way, or at least got us to Sundance in some way. And I had heard that he did something with Kill Bill somehow. I think there's some kind of extras where he comes in as Black Dynamite.
Oh, are you serious?
Yes.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
I think we got to find that. But I read that.
Even their approach to, because Scott had said that in having conversations with Michael, that the idea was not that Michael Jai White was playing Black Dynamite. Yeah. In his head,
yes.
Michael Jai White was like a tight end for the Baltimore Colts in the 1970s who someone gave a blaxploitation film to be the star of. So he was in character doing a character.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that a non-performer might not think to do, but it adds a dimension
definitely
to the performance and to that genre that they were satirizing that just made it flawless.
Yes. Ferrante Jones or something like was the character's name. And he told me something like that. And it made me, when I did my character, I was like, okay, I'm going to be an actor acting this guy as this guy. I don't know what the character's name was anymore, but
who, yours? It
was, yeah.
Chocolate Giddy Up.
Yes. Was the character.
Oh, but what's your guy's name?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So I was an actor, you know, I was also an actor being the guy being, you know, Chocolate Giddy Up. And those movies always made me laugh because no one was ever scared of the guy. Like, everyone knows his powers.
Yeah.
Everyone knows what he's capable of. He's going to kick everyone's ass in here, but no one's ever afraid. And so I was like, do you mind if I'm like, you know, I asked him, do you mind that I'm scared of you? You know, he's like, go ahead, improvise. So all my stuff was just me fucking around. And
oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Very giving. And as with Scott, you know, they were just like, yeah, go, just do it. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be the guy that's scared of, that's actually aware, you know? And also, you're taking my livelihood. Like, I sell drugs.
To the community.
Yeah. Like, that's, but Black Dynamite, that's what I do, man.
I know, he just can't understand.
It's just
like,
very honest.
It's my job.
Yeah, that's, wait a minute. That's why we're all here, really, but that's me.
I really needed to understand more about the backstory and landscape of Captain Kangaroo Pimp. I just really needed to understand what I mean, I do too now. That scene, like that Pimp Council scene, is almost in a way like the cantina scene where it's like, I want to know more about all these guys. Of these characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what's Hammerhead? Where does he come from? What's his background? How did he get here? You know? Like, any one of the characters.
Yeah, Kotex. Yeah, what is he doing? John Sally and is back there. What is he doing? Like, what is that? Oh, my God. Yeah. So, all those guys were just, you know... You really do want to know everything about it. Boris, who else was in there? There was a ton of people in there.
But that's all. That's also, you know, what the Groundlings trains you for is like to find, like instantaneously find what the heart of the character is.
Yes,
and explode with it.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that? Like, what is the, you know, when you're given that. I mean, anyone, when you're doing roll call, and you could have just said Chocolate Giddy Up, but you sang, you know, it's like that became so identifiable to him. So what is it that you're seeing when someone hands you some sides and you know, like, well, I have one page to, like, make this guy pop?
I guess I don't really make it a conscious decision. I don't go in. I guess I go in, what can I contribute? How can I make this project better? But I don't really make a conscious decision on what I can say or do that will make it funnier. I don't know. It just that's what spoke to me. I read that line and he was singing that, and especially with the costume. Ruth E. Carter did the costume.
Oh, wow.
For that. Yeah, and I had that pink cowboy hat on, and these stirrups, and. A powder puff, and I'm like, this guy's an idiot, you know. But he's a pimp, and he's, you know, he's cool with it, and that voice came out, you know, the real kind of thing, that just, you know, real Southern kind of thing, but the very 70s black guy, you know, and that's, you know, I don't know.
I just loved that all the pimps sort of reminded me of like comics in the 80s where it's like, we gotta have a hook. Like, someone sat them down. Someone sat them down and
Lorne
was like...
Lorne Michaels is right there. You're the making copies, pimp.
You're the... Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What's your name? Danny. No, it's not.
No, it's not.
You're Chocolate Giddy Up. Yeah. You know, like, or whatever.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
And that they all, like, that they had to have a thing that set them apart from everyone else in their game.
Yes.
And it makes sense. Like, it makes sense because they all have it. You know what it was? It was just branding.
Yeah.
They were just good at branding in the 70s, you know?
Just branding. Oh, it reminds me that Michael Jai told me that he came up with Chocolate Giddy Up as a, like, alias he uses from time to time, or he did, whether it be, like, getting it in a hotel or getting it, he would use that. You
so
know,
when he calls down the front desk at concierge, they go, "Yes, Mr. Giddy Up. How may I help you, Mr. Giddy Up?"
I feel like it's bringing more of a spotlight than needs to be. Just say your name's Michael. Chocolate Giddy Up. But yeah, that was a character he would use.
Do you like? I mean, obviously, that's a whole different type of performance muscle, but. Yeah. You know, when you're doing more straight ahead stuff, do you prefer that, or to you is it just different sides of the same coin?
Yes, it's the same. First of all, I like employment.
Mm-hmm. Employment's good.
Employment's good. Second, it is different. It is different sides because I come from theater and I come from doing a lot of straight stuff before I got into comedy and sketch. So I love storytelling so much, but that I know I can go far and wide and big, but I really love, you know, the small stuff, the stuff that we can, you know, really, you know, do the character work for. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm doing this now with Speechless a little bit, but I don't think, you know, a lot of people don't know, you know, a lot of my background is theater and a lot of Shakespeare and a lot of straight stuff where I did nothing but cry and get angry,
right?
And none of the funny stuff that, you know, that I've been known for now.
And did the Shakespeare training? I mean, because Shakespeare is so its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that train you for you know, when you're just a guy with a kid, you know, like how do you?
It's the same, you know, doing my research, doing the backstory, you know, thinking about how this guy, you know, does his day. You know, his background, his, you know, who he lives with, if he's by himself, you know, his love life, his, you know, what he eats in the morning, all that stuff is very helpful, which will, you know, it's that lame stuff that you got to do, but it resonates with audiences because I've done my work. I'm very confident going in who I am. You know, I know who Chocolate Giddy Up is because... That motherfucker eats Cap'n Crunch. He's got a little bit of a scar in the roof of his mouth because of the Cap'n Crunch.
Yeah, and if it doesn't sog up a little bit in the milk, it's very rough. It's a
very
weapon.
Rough.
Yeah, it's like eating a moon rock. Yeah. It's just right in the...
God damn it. Now I got to get these hoes. These hoes better have my money because I'm really upset right now. Very, very, like, very upset.
It's like he just wants the cereal to be friendly to him because he enjoys it so much.
Damn it.
But almost every time, it's like, God damn it, again?
Yes. Who's that? Captain Kangaroo.
Can you talk to the captains? Can you talk to the other captains? All the captains know each other.
They all
Captain Crunch, Captain Kangaroo, Captain and Tennille, they're all friends.
Talk to the hilarious, yeah.
But
it's just doing your research, and you know, with this show Speechless now, I did a lot of, you know, learning about disability and about cerebral palsy and about actual AIDS to people with kids who have cerebral palsy and how they, you know, they go about their day. And And with that, now I have the confidence to be one, you know, on a show because I've done my work.
Yeah. And I would imagine that a show like that, just as a person, probably makes you a more empathetic creature in the world.
Definitely. I have plenty of empathy myself. I mean, being a black man, you know about discrimination, you know about this stuff, but there's this whole other, you know, other world of disability of, you know, I have my thing about, you know, getting in the door, but what about literally getting in the door?
Right,
like,
right.
Is this even accessible to even, you know, bring my wheelchair in here, you know? So that doing the show the last three seasons and actually meeting families and kids that, you know, will come up and say they wish they had a, you know, an aide like me. It's just like, you actually feel like, oh, I'm actually doing something for someone here.
Yeah.
You know, not just making them laugh, but this is actually like tangible, or where kids feel like, you know what, I might be able to be an actor, you know, because I see a kid on this show with cerebral palsy and, you know, and navigating it and doing well, and you know, and the show being so popular, you know, it's groundbreaking, and it makes me feel like, oh, I'm actually contributing to society here. This is actually great.
And do you think? Because I think as we all get older, hopefully we all get more empathetic.
Yeah.
You know, because when you're young, especially with comedy, when you're young, you're like, oh man, nothing's off limits. I can joke about anything. You start to get older, you're like, well, I don't want anyone to feel bad. Oh, that's actually not that funny because, you know, like the more you learn, the more you understand, the more you, you know, like you don't, the older you get, the less you want to be, you know, you want to be pointing down and laughing at people, you know, you don't want to do that at all.
Yeah.
And so have you felt your comedy evolve over time?
Yes and no. I'm still terrible. I still am like, fuck you, and you know, a lot of things, and I can get that part of me out. Once you get older, you do, you know. I was watching Little House on the Prairie earlier today, and I'm bawling, bawling.
I hope that ends up on your Wikipedia page.
Yeah.
Little known fact: Cedric Yarbrough cries to Little House on the Prairie.
Well, Nels, Mrs. Olson's husband.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the show?
I'm somewhat familiar with it. You know, when I was a kid, I was probably watching more Battlestar Galactica than I was Little House on the Prairie.
Yeah, I was watching Little House.
Okay, sure.
More sensitive. But Nels, there's a circus that comes into town, and the fat lady in the circus is related to one of the main characters, and we find out, you know, throughout the show, and and he's estranged her because of her obesity, and then they come together at the end, and I'm bawling at the end, like
so
an
sweet.
Idiot.
Yeah, so sweet.
Yeah, but I'm old now, and now I cry.
Well, you know what? You know what? What I think as we become more empathetic creatures, we understand that everyone wants to feel a part of something, and everyone wants to be loved. And so when you see it happen, or you see people finally let all their dumb shit go and come together, of course you're like, oh, that's just beautiful.
This
I can't
gorgeous.
Believe people
this
do
is
that.
Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, that also, kind of in tie with Speechless, with this show, is, you know, talking to like my mother and black people that, you know, that grew up in the 50s and 60s, and when they would finally see someone black on television, like James Brown on Ed Sullivan, and they would gather around the television and finally see this guy who's killing it.
Yeah.
He's awesome and he's the best. And you finally have representation. And that's how I feel about, you know, with this show, with Micah Fowler, who plays this kid with CP. Finally, you know, you're being represented with someone who is, you know, a real character, not someone who's just a side character, but he's the lead
right.
of this show. We want to know everything and anything about what he's going through. Can he make it to college? Is he going to find a girlfriend? Is he going to be an asshole to his brother and sister? Is he, you know, how is he going to treat his aide when they finally separate, you know, now that he's going to college and his aide is going, you know, elsewhere? How is that dynamic going to happen? You know, it's you want to be represented, you know, like everyone does.
Everyone wants to feel connected to someone.
Yeah.
And it's perfect form. Entertainment should help foster a community and inspire and make people, you know, make people feel things, happy things, sad things. And, you know, to see and to know that, you know, there are people who might watch a show and feel like, oh, okay, I understand what's going on, but it feels like I'm standing outside looking
yes.
in
mm-hmm.
and I can't actually project myself into this story. It's not aspirational to me because I don't identify
yeah.
with that particular experience.
Yeah.
I can understand from over here what it's like over mm-hmm. there, but I want it to be here. And that's,
right.
you know, so, you know, I'm glad to see that more, there's more diversity even with, you know, within the deaf community or within the CP community or different communities that are being represented now, because mm-hmm. everyone should get
someone
that they can look to and go,
I get it. Yeah. Okay,
I can
yes.
do that. I can connect mm-hmm. to that. I can, you know, like yeah. I can accomplish stuff.
Sure. Sure. Or I empathize with that.
Right.
Because it's universal, that the story's universal, but there's someone there that looks like me, speaks like me, looks, you know, I'm hoping we'll do it. We'll hear in May. You know, now's the time that we'll hear if
oh,
the
right.
show gets
oh, yeah,
up
yeah,
that.
Yeah. We're almost
so,
there.
Yeah. So we'll see if we get a season 4. It would be cool.
Are you writing anything right now?
I'm coming up with some stuff, some ideas, and, you know, a couple of things are in the iron, you know, on the fire. And, you know, we'll see. You know, it's I like to keep busy that way, but, you know, I don't know. You know, that's a part of my confidence I don't have. My writing
mm-hmm.
has always been a little bit of my, you know, my downfall. And I wish, you know, if I could go back and teach a class in acting and teach a class somewhere in some college, I would really, really, you know, emphasize, you know, get your writing in. Everyone really, you never know. People aren't necessarily checking for you in Hollywood.
Right.
Write your own vehicle. Write what you know.
Right.
What's best for you. What, you know, no one else knows you better than you. Write, be able to do that and be able to be rejected over and over again. About,
right.
You know, this isn't good. And be able to throw that away and come up with other ideas. You know, I really wish I could go back in time and hone that part of my, you know, this creativity.
Yeah, because it doesn't, like, something doesn't have to be so on the nose autobiographical. Like, Get Out was obviously a very personal story to Jordan.
Yes.
But it's not, but it wasn't like, hi, I'm Jordan, and this is something that I've noticed about our society. Mm-hmm. Like, he managed to tell the story in a really interesting way while revealing something deeply personal.
Right.
And that is, that's obviously the goal.
Yes.
Without, you know, without it having to be like, here is an autobiography of mm-hmm. my life and things that I feel. And it's like,
yeah.
How do you infuse that and give, you know, in this case, like a thriller slash horror, like real substance and real heart, sure. You know?
And something that I would like to see. I haven't seen this.
Right.
I want to see this on screen.
That's right. The more personal something is, the less like anything else it will be.
Sure.
Because everyone is a unique cluster of experiences.
Yeah.
What is what are the types of – hi.
Hey.
My wife is – you don't have to tiptoe. Hey, it's fine. This isn't a live television show, so we don't – clop by.
Yeah,
this is,
it's all right. It's good.
This is our shared space.
Yeah, there's a badger there. So yeah, go ahead.
It's a wolverine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which is basically like a murder badger. They're like
they're meaner.
Way. Oh God, wolverines are pound for pound. A wolverine is like the fiercest creature in the wild.
Well, but badgers don't give a fuck, right?
Honey badgers don't give a fuck. Regular badgers. I feel like they give too much of a fuck.
They give a lot of
They're
fucks.
Very obsessed with Instagram, like what they're, how many likes.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Oh, I dug out this beehive and no one really, I didn't
no
get
one
this.
Care. What well, am I no one likes
fuck.
It.
All right.
I even showed it, you know. I took a picture of it and no one, wow. It's on my Insta story and I put a, you know, a song to it. And
do I need to do more live badger videos? Like, what do I maybe, need to, yeah. Like, how do I get into the algorithm? I don't understand how I'm really going to.
Oh, maybe I should do it at 2:00.
Oh, yeah. Then... That's, yeah. The insights are telling me that people are more interested in badger stories from 2 to 3.
From 2 to 3. And then, yeah, I did it.
I'm going to get in there.
Time. That's stupid.
Oh, you know what I need to do? I need to comment on other badgers pages too. And maybe some other animals.
Right.
Like an impala or that like would a zebra. Make sense. Yeah. Just bring in different.
You know what? Let me just erase this whole thing. This,
shit.
Yeah. Let's forget this.
We're going to start this over.
Okay.
We're going to start this. That is how I feel most of the time. I'm making fun of a fake character, and inside I'm going, yeah, I do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that too.
I shouldn't have put it out right now.
Yeah, I shouldn't.
2:00. Yeah,
fuck.
That was the algorithm.
1,000 more likes are going to really fill the hole. This is going to make everything complete.
Yeah, because it makes you feel good. I mean, you feel, oh, look at, oh, yeah.
I've been validated. Well, because it's so hard. It's hard to really know how you're doing in life anyway. And then this thing comes along that gives you this sort of fake metric on here's how you're doing, you know, and especially if you're a performer, how do we quantify what we do? You know, it's like you know, there are ways where you can go like, okay, well our show sold out at the Groundlings. So obviously it must be doing well. But in general, it's very, how do you know how you're doing? I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that is.
Right. And you know, like generations before didn't need that. Like buck up.
Damn it. Walk it off.
Yeah, walk that shit off. What's the matter? You want to be liked?
Yeah.
How about get a job?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're living. You're actually breathing. And there's something to it, you know? It's like, why do I need to be liked all the fucking time? It's
right.
Not good to be liked all the time, actually. It's actually, you know, especially as an actor, you want to be able to hide a little bit and not put yourself out there all the fucking time, you know?
Yeah.
And what is cool is like, oh, I didn't know what he ate. He's mysterious and he disappeared into that role. And I really believe this guy because I don't know anything else about him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny you say that because my wife, like someone was saying to her like, oh, you know, you should post more of this and do more personal that. And she was like, I'm an actor. Like, I don't want to reveal too much about myself because then if people know you too much, then it becomes hard for them to buy you as a character when they see you in a thing.
Yeah.
But everyone just thinks like, oh yeah, we have to, you know, it's like rip back the curtain all the time. And somehow that is a value.
Yeah. And it's a delicate balance because If I had my druthers, I wouldn't be on any of that stuff. But it does help sell your product that you want.
So you can keep doing the thing. So you can
keep doing
the
thing that you love.
Yeah.
But man, it's does Denzel have to worry about this shit?
No. There's a whole bunch of people who are sort of grandfathered in a way where it's like they don't. But I'm still fascinated to see like. You ever watch John Travolta's feed on Instagram?
No.
It's hilarious. He just makes, like, he's such a dad. And he just makes these silly videos. Like, he'll do sketches with his kids.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to see him. And, like, part of me feels like, you don't need to do this,
you don't have to.
But the other side of it, though, it's fascinating. Yeah. And it's also fun. Will Smith is another guy who's just, like, has completely embraced.
Yes, he has.
Fucking around online.
Yeah.
And in a way, I respect it because I'm like, oh, you don't have to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you embrace it just shows me that you're a fun, silly dude.
Right.
And that this is just a way for you to connect with people.
He also has kind of a nice team behind him that
he does,
has
to do that. So
that would be kind of nice, too, to have a kind of a team that just takes care of your shit.
Stuff for you. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, all right.
I always say, like, you want to, you know, with like, fame stuff, it's like really the best place to be is where you're just known enough that you could get a table at a restaurant you like.
Mm-hmm.
And anything more than that really is an obstacle.
Yes.
To sort of, because, you know, you don't want people caring too much about every move that you make.
You do.
You don't want to be so popular that if you make a thing or a movie or something that people don't like, then they just fucking can't wait to rip you down.
Right.
You just kind of want to be in this mid-range where it's like, well, you know, enough people know, they're nice, they're cool about it.
You've mastered that, I think. I think you have a nice, good...
There's a nice little zone in there.
Yeah, you got a nice, good zone where, you know, I'm in a fucking awesome house. I got a damn badge. Well, what is that? The Wolverine here, you know? This is a nice... You got a nice little spot.
No, I'm very happy. And it's not... you know, it's like I don't need to do stand-up in arenas to feel validated. Like, I like kind of, you know, like if I get to keep doing what I'm doing now, I'm very happy in this
right.
zone,
yeah.
you know? But too much is not good. It's even though people would go, what are you talking about? Our American culture has dictated that more of everything is better. It's but more stuff is more responsibility.
Sure.
It's more stress.
Yeah.
It's more, you know, people relying on you. It's more, you know, bigger letdowns when, if you don't make something that people, I don't know. It's just kind of nice where even if you make something, it doesn't set the world up on fire, then it doesn't really matter. People are like, oh, it's fine.
And it's all personality, too, because a bit like Sam Jackson's huge.
Yeah.
Ridiculously. I mean, the world knows this man.
Yeah.
And yet, I don't think he gives a fuck about a lot of shit. Like, if it doesn't work, fuck y'all.
Well, look how far into his life he was when he hit Morgan Freeman, too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but, you know, Sam Jackson... who I always think of as a guy who tries to rob McDougal's in Coming to America. You know, like of all the people in that movie.
Man, he really
and that
did
guy's
try.
Like the biggest star, you know. He has one scene where basically he gets throttled by Eddie Murphy and it's Sam Jackson,
with a broom.
Yeah, and he's one of the most famous people in the world.
Yeah.
Coming to America too, by the way, is being made. You know about that.
Talk about Eddie, Eddie and Arsenio back together again.
I hope it works. I want to love it.
I want to get in that film with someone.
You should. Are they casting it now?
How do you get in stuff? That's what I need to do. I need to get that famous. How do I just go, you know what? I want to be in that movie.
Maybe you talk about it on a podcast and someone hears it.
Maybe.
And they whisper in Eddie Murphy's ear. God, that'd be great.
That's the only reason why I'm here, Chris.
God, that movie holds up.
I hope so, too. I think...
It does. No, the first movie...
That first one... Oh, my God. It's so funny.
We just watched it again at Christmas.
Yeah.
And... Because there's a place... I think maybe it's Fat Sal's.
Yes.
The sandwich shop.
Yes.
They turned it into McDougal's.
Yes.
For Halloween. And the last two fucking years, we've driven by. And the line is so fucking long.
Yes.
I want to go in it, but the line is literally blocks long. it's and crazy. I just don't have the constitution to wait outside.
And when everyone will be like, all right, Hardwick.
No, I'm not even worried about that. Well, it's just standing.
You would get, because I'm in that line and I would go, hey.
Did you do it?
No, because I didn't want, hey, Cedric. But yeah, that line is crazy long. But it was so, I mean, I did go in like a 1 p.m. when no one was there.
Yeah.
And just to look at the menu. And it was so hilarious. They did it right.
I really hope, because I've been following stories about it. And the last I read, like, you know, is John Amos going to be in it? I don't know. Is it going to? I just hope he is in it.
God,
because
on.
He has a responsibility
to
the world.
Yes.
To be Cleo McDowell.
I mean,
again.
He was so fucking good in that movie. He's so good.
Now they're the frozen kind, but you could never tell. It's just like that guy.
James Earl too. I mean, yes. He's so good in those films. They really are like, you know, people don't champion them as the, like, you know, you think of James Earl, you think of, you know, Darth Vader or other projects, but he's so good in it.
The thing that I love so much about Cleo McDowell is that I really feel like that character has so much depth because you see that he has worked. This is what everyone needs, is a really deep dive into the character study of Coming to America.
I guarantee you, I bet he did. I bet he went into that.
But you see that Cleo is, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had to do some stuff to ensure for his family,
yes.
You know? So it's like, if that means he is the Johns to McDonald's Vons, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, he's not hurting anybody.
No.
And he has a lazy boy that he's very proud of. He's, you know, he's very comfortable. He's provided well for his family. His daughters are doing great. I mean, he's a, by all accounts, I think Cleo McDowell is like a good, he's a good role model.
He is a role model, but he stole everything.
To be fair, yes.
He did, but he's just doing it to provide for his family.
You know, the golden arcs. They're just, it's close. They're close.
They're very close. I was trying to find a picture for Halloween. I went as, what's his name? God damn it. The guy who sings, I believe.
Sexual Chocolate?
Yes.
Name, he has a real.
Yeah, his real name is, oh.
Oh, and he was in the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama.
That's My Mama, yeah.
You know
damn
what?
It.
I'm going to pull this up. let's see. Here's the.
And you all know it's Joe the Policeman from the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama. I want you to put your hands together.
Randy Watson.
And welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause for Jackson Heights' own Mr. Randy Watson. Yes! Randy Watson.
Randy
Watson. That boy's good.
Yeah, good and terrible.
Good and terrible.
I mean, come on. They must have had such a good time just coming up with that shit, you know?
Just doing that performance.
Let's come up with these other characters. You know, we're going to move the plot along, but they're watching this shit.
That's the key, is that it wasn't, you know, a lot of times, and this especially will happen, this has happened, you know, over the decades with, you know, SNL movie. Like, this wasn't an SNL movie, but I mean, like, someone who's been on SNL who does those kind of, like, characters. Mm-hmm. It's like that there's so much character stuff that the story's difficult to follow.
To follow, yeah.
And with here, it's so supplemental and complementary to the story. The barbershop and that and everything else.
Yeah.
That it's – the story's great, and then on top of it, they get to fuck around in the sides and not
around.
Get in the way of, of the main thing.
Of the real thing that's supposed to be happening.
But I think that what that movie has – is it's not just a comedy for comedy's sake. There's a real heart to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times we forget that when we're making comedy things because we get so much in service of the jokes that we forget of, like, well, what's the heart? Like, what's the human story? Like, the jokes should just decorate the human story and not just be the whole thing.
Right. Right.
I mean, even a movie like Anchorman, like, there's still like there's still like a real heart to the story.
Yeah, there's that love story, you know, and for both, you know, him trying to find a bride that he really was trying to, you know, but also the genius is the worlds that both that, you know, the duality of both worlds, the African world and this new Queens world that they are so detailed, you know, in when they're coming in and dancing for that wedding. That, I mean, it's gorgeous, it's beautiful, and so well done. You know, you just love the movie just from that aspect, that when they come in sweeping and that dancing shit was wonderful. Then you come in to New York, fuck it, you know, everyone's like right away.
Fuck you! Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's one scene that I really need in Coming to America 2, and it could just be very brief, but it would just be... like something else could be happening in the scene, but you would see Akeem walking away from a meeting with T'Challa. Like, I need to know that Zamunda and Wakanda somehow
that
there's some sort of a connection. I need those universes.
Kind of that. That would be fantastic.
I need those universes tied that together in some way. Just in some way.
Quick
That would really make me happy. We buy a lot of I just buy a lot of like goofy movie props and stuff, and one of the things that I was really excited about recently was I have Zamunda money from
my
the movie.
God.
Yeah.
He's got his own money. That is so fucking funny. John Amos, man, that guy, he's one of those actors that I look up to as, you know, just as a character actor. He was always good in everything he did. From Mary Tyler Moore.
Good little, times?
Good, I mean.
Yeah, he was a sports guy in Mary Tyler Moore.
In Mary Tyler Moore, yeah. But his, you know, good times, the quintessential badass father that, you know, cared about the family, but would beat your ass if you did anything that would, you know, just the threatening stuff that he would do, but, you know, with a twinkle in his eye that just made you laugh. And, you know, it's, you know, you watch those shows again now, you know, and the death when he died
on Good Times.
It was, oh, heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
It was awful. Absolutely awful.
Yeah, well, in the 70s is when they started experimenting with sometimes sitcoms can be sad.
Yeah.
You know, like there was a gritty, that kind of like that Norman Lear revolution. Yeah.
Sometimes characters have abortions.
Yeah. Some of your favorite characters have real issues.
Yes.
Like they argue with people and they're small-minded sometimes.
You love, yeah. But yeah, when they killed him off, that was... That was crazy. I was watching some documentary about that, and how, you know, he was just basically told on the phone, you know, we're not going to renew your contract.
Oh, I just assumed he quit. Like, no. Why would anyone?
No, he was not very happy with where the show was going. Apparently, a lot of the jokes were because he thought the show was going to be one thing, and it's starting to turn into the JJ show.
Yes, because JJ became Dynamite became so famous.
Yes,
and JJ was.
So he was complaining, you know, and he made his, you know, opinions felt, and you know, they were tired of it, so they were like, yeah, we're not gonna.
Damn.
Bring you back. Damn.
But that just, that, and then he continued to work.
Yes.
For decades.
He was in Roots and, you know, he did all kinds of stuff. But yeah, he was, you know, but he was phenomenal on that show. So good.
I mean, that's a big deal to not be afraid to rock the boat when you don't believe in what you're doing. And it's the 70s. Mm-hmm. And you know it's not like... There are a million other sitcoms that he can jump onto.
Right.
Because the fabric of the entertainment industry is just so much different back then.
Yeah.
And so what is he, you know, what does he do? And then, you know, he still ends up.
Yeah. He felt like it was very important for what he was. He was supposed to be this father, this patriarch of this family. And he thought these two, you know, the mother and father were supposed to be the heads of this household. And he just felt like this kid is now taking over the head of this show.
Right.
And that's not what I signed up for.
Right.
You know, I don't know if I could, you know, if Speechless says something to me tomorrow about something, I'm like, hey, okay, I'll do it. Sure. Whatever you want. What, Minnie Driver's going to tap dance on my head? Okay, fine. That's
sure,
great.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, that's fine.
Great. That's great.
Good, good. And I'm going to enjoy it. My mouth will be open. Fine. Perfect.
Well, but also, you know, like it, there is that sort of thing between, it, you know, I do think, though, if something challenged the fabric of your belief system,
sure. No,
you wouldn't, you'd stand up for it.
Yeah,
definitely. You know,
definitely.
Like you wouldn't. I mean, within reason, like, you don't want to be difficult. If, you know, it's like at a certain point, like, yeah, you know, we're all just playing pretend. It's silly. You know, like we should be flexible. But if something violated, you know, if you really felt like, ugh, my gut feels real bad about this, I don't think you would do it.
I wouldn't. And I'll, you know, I'd be like, okay, I'll have to forego the Wolverine. It won't be in my house this year.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, listen, having a Wolverine does make everything better. It's nice to have him in the house. I mean, if someone breaks in and then they just see that, like, staring at the entryway.
I'm running the other way.
Exactly, because what type of a person would just have that in their living room?
Someone that I don't wanna... A lunatic.
Yeah.
Someone who's not very stable.
Now, I'm not – I'm by no means dangerous or threatening in any way. My wife has had weapons training. Like, she'd be the one to, you know, for people to really be afraid of.
Somebody I should be afraid of.
Yeah, yeah, but it's not me.
It's not you?
No. I would hide or try to climb out the window or something.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not a formidable opponent in any way. But, I mean, when you – as you explore more of your writing and as you explore more of these things, you know, are there – certain themes, certain ideas, certain stories that you feel like you really want to tell? Are they autobiographical? Are they sociological? Are they just silly? What is it that you want to do?
There's things of that nature that, you know, a little more autobiographical. Did I say that word right? I don't know if I said that
autobiographical
word. Autobiographical. There it is. There it is. A little about me.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also some things I want to do theatrically. I'm a big, huge musical theater nerd.
Yeah.
So some of that stuff I want to explore. I would love to do, Blazing Saddles, the musical. I mean, that, just the fart scene alone would be so funny.
Do you think
funny.
They could do Blazing Saddles, the musical now? It's pretty, I mean, like, I feel like they'd have to update it a bit.
A little bit, but I mean, I update it. I mean, when I first thought of this idea, I just thought, you know, the Obama presidency was so ready. This is so exactly what is happening. That fart scene is the Republican Party and you know, this black sheriff coming in to save the town, you know, I thought would have been perfect. But yeah, maybe an update of that. There's also, I want to do, did you ever see the movie To Sir With Love?
I know the movie you're talking about.
Sidney Poitier comes in. He's an engineer. He's not getting work as an engineer, but so he finds this job as a teacher in the UK. And now he's got to teach these English toffs about life. And then, oh, there you are, chimney sweep. Oh, you're going to teach me something,
right?
And they're really not. They really don't need to learn anything about other than, you know, they come from a very lower class, structure. And so all they really need to learn is about being human, you know, as opposed to a certain, you know, to be a doctor. That's not going to happen for you. We all know that. What you need to learn is just how to talk to human beings and, you know, and wash your clothes and brush your teeth and being able to greet, you know, people in the world. And so he teaches these kids about, you know, about life. And he's about to leave and go back to America and then decides to stay, you know, with all these toughs, these street toughs that end up falling in love with him because how great of a teacher he was. Yeah. And I just thought, man, if we did that, you know, even kept it in the 60s musical, in a 60s musical style, you know, kept it, you know, maybe open it in the West End and then maybe even bring it out here. I think it would be fantastic.
That's a cool idea.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Now I got to get the rights to it.
All I have to do is get the rights to that, write it. Get someone to pay for it.
Get the rights for Mel Brooks as well.
Yeah.
So I'm stealing everyone else's ideas. That's
basically. No. You're updating.
Yeah.
It's your own McDowell's.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, that is what we've learned today.
Blazing Saddles is flaming chaps.
Yes. Yeah. To Serve With Love is to guy we like.
Yeah, yeah, lot. That guy
we like a lot.
That he's the best one, this guy, this teacher. Sure. He's from here and they're from there, but they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's a long title, but it conveys the idea.
Sure, I like yeah. it. I like it.
These guys sort it out. Love. It's all right then.
Flaming Chaps.
Yeah, that might actually be a different movie.
Yeah, so that was a really different movie.
That was not a good.
That was all right.
It was bad on my part.
Is that song? This is like the Blue Oyster.
Oh, that's Police Academy.
Yes, yeah.
Yes.
Do it. Hey.
It's amazing to me that there has not been a Police Academy movie made in so long that they just stopped the franchise. I think it's time again.
That would be nice. That would be nice. You know, what is Hightower doing now? I mean, is he alive?
Is Bubba Smith still alive?
Yeah.
Probably. Michael Winslow's still alive.
Michael Winslow's still doing stuff.
Gutenberg's still alive.
Definitely.
Maybe Gutenberg needs to be like the Captain Lasard character where he's just become this kind of weird old guy.
He's the weird guy now. He's the mean dude that gets glued, his stuff getting
glued. And then maybe – well, because Lasard was like – he was just sort of out of his mind. And so maybe what we would find is that Captain Lasard was actually like a Mahoney when he was younger and just sort of lost his mind a little bit.
It writes itself.
And Mahoney,
Chris, look at you.
You know what?
Look at you, Chris. You're brilliant.
You know, I'm going to call Bobcat. yeah. Tim Kazarinski's still around.
Yes.
Like, there's still a lot of people.
Do we have a guy that could be this, you know, this generation's Bobcat?
I don't know, but I we have this generation's Mahoney, and his name is Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds,
definitely,
starring in a Police Academy
for
movie
sure,
would be fucking fantastic.
Definitely, definitely, definitely.
I mean, if he can do a Detective Pikachu movie, he can do a reboot of the Police Academy franchise.
I mean, put Ron Funches in a...
Oh, come on!
In a police uniform?
Yes!
Come on.
Yes! I mean, God damn it!
I don't know Mahoney, but this doesn't look right to me. I've never done a Ron Funches impression.
Good.
Thank you.
We need this to happen. You might need to put all that other stuff on hold.
Yeah, yeah.
And after you do Our Generation's Harlem Nights and To Serve With Love and Flaming Chaps. And then you maybe have to do the Police Academy just to see Ron Funches in it.
Yeah.
He was fucking born too late. He should have been in it. There's a crime against nature that Ron Funches was not in Police Academy. God damn it, I need that to happen.
Yeah, that does need to happen.
Shit.
Oh, Ron. Man. Well, yeah, get Ron in. You know what? Now I need Ron in this movie, too, with all of us in there, with Keegan and Jordan. And I forgot Ron. Yeah, now I got to write Ron a role.
I'm just casting the new Police Academy.
Okay, you're over there, but I'm still... Man, I also feel like am I cheating on the Reno 911 franchise by doing this Police Academy thing?
Totally different. First of all, Police Academy was before Reno 911.
Definitely, but
so
should I dip my toe in? Maybe I shouldn't be a part of this at all.
So you're worried about being branded too much of cop satire?
Yeah. Fuck. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's Cedar Yarbrough, that's all he does.
Now you're worried about it.
Yeah.
You're overthinking it too much. This is maybe what Eddie Murphy does.
It's all coming around, man. This is like a circle of life. Yeah. And thinking about it too much. Okay. I'm in.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Sorry. I apologize. I'm back in. I'm back in the
Because
Police
as
Academy.
We know in the entertainment business, to just say you want to do something makes it happen
That's
right away.
That's what happens, yeah.
So
course,
it's fine.
Course.
So now...
Well, that's how my mom thinks.
You know? Of course.
Well, why don't you just tell him...
I love those conversations. I love those conversations.
Call Robert De Niro up and say you want to be with him.
You know what I just saw? I just saw this movie, Inception. You should be in that one. Okay.
You know who's cute? That Halle Berry. Why don't you... Hallie, Mom? Whatever.
I don't think she's seeing anyone. You should call her.
Oh, goodness. She is very pretty.
Yeah.
Why don't you... What's the matter with you?
Why don't you just call her?
God, you're so difficult.
You just didn't like this because I suggested it.
What?
Well... also, there's a lot of stuff in between here and there that maybe wouldn't work.
Yeah.
However, now since we're talking about it, Halle Berry could be in this movie that you're talking about, and that's how you guys meet.
Man, yeah, that could be good. Oh man, what has she done lately? Oh, she was just in that John Wick thing.
Is she in the new John Wick movie?
I think so. Yeah. I think she's doing that. I see her on Instagram working out a lot.
Yep. Just casually throw that in.
Yeah.
I just happened to see. I just happened to catch her, checked her updates a lot, and noticed that she was working on some stuff.
Very oiled.
When's your next Groundling show?
It's every third Monday of the month.
Every third Monday. Okay, great.
But yeah, it's a great show. I don't brag about myself very much, but this is the best live show.
So who all's in the show?
Gary Anthony Williams, Jordan Black, Phil Lamar.
Oh, right.
And Danielle and Naima and myself. And sometimes we'll have guests. Wayne Brady will play with us from time to time.
Oh, that's great.
Jordan and Keegan come back from time to time and play. It's always a really good show. It's always different, too. It's always a new movie. We ask the audience what movie you want to see. They shout out. And then by applause, we do that film.
What's been your favorite so far?
Silence of the Lambs was really funny. That one was called "Why You Eating People." We did. What's that one movie with? We had some of the best titles. We've done Mary Poppins. That was called Rashida Popoff. we did The Dark Knight. That was The Darker Knight.
Got it.
Of course. What's the one where Dr. Doolittle?
Eddie Murphy did the Dr. Didn't Eddie Murphy do Dr. Doolittle?
Oh, okay. Then that's not what I'm talking about.
The one where he talks to the animals.
No, not that. There's the guy, the doctor who teaches the girl to be a better...
Oh, you're talking about Audrey Hepburn.
Yes.
You're talking about My Fair Lady.
Yes, My Fair Lady.
Yes.
Ours was called She's A'ight. it's such a fun show, and we have such a good time.
Do you walk out on stage and say someone just recommend a movie?
Yeah.
And someone will say, like, Back to the Future, and then
what's the title of it? Okay, let's do a song in the style of Boyz II Men or in the style of Al Green or whatever to inspire the song. And so I'll get up and sing a song or, rap one, with a couple of the cast members. And then that will inspire the movie, and we do the movie. And then we'll come back and we'll do the second act.
Have you done Back to the Future yet?
Yes.
Oh, you have. Okay.
The last one we just did was Back to the Future 3.
Very specific.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We did Back to the Future. I can't remember what the title was, but
because you would have to go back to the Old West.
Yeah, we did. But I think we went somewhere else other than the Old West. But it's such a fun show. We have a great time. We have amazing audiences too that really enjoy, very diverse audiences too that really enjoy that kind of comedy. It's fun.
I hope that you write more and get more of that stuff going.
Yeah, I think I need to get my writing juices out there. I just do a lot of editing myself, and that part I'm not as confident in.
That's so funny to me because the whole thing that you do with the Groundlings is that you can't edit anything. You just have to do it.
Yeah, yeah. But when I'm by myself, writing, you're like, I don't know if I should show this to anybody. I'll just keep this here for a little while, But, because everyone, and that's the other thing, like, something like this, like with the black version, it's, like an Insta story. It's gone and, poof.
Right.
You improvise, it's gone. you know, yeah, writing thing, that's around for a while.
It's a little more permanent.
Yeah. Yeah. And that part of it is that's scary for me. My acting, I've always been scared of that, but I'm more confident in it because I know that of the training that mm-hmm. I've done. I don't have any training in writing, you know, that's, you know, a writing class is one thing, but that's, I don't know.
You just got to do it.
Okay. Well,
you just got to do it. You get out there and you just.
From your gorgeous bearded face.
Put your thing in the world.
God's. All right, Mom. Fine.
You know what you ought to do?
Yeah.
You ought to make your movie. And then you take Halle Berry to the premiere. That's what you gotta do. Why didn't you do
my
that?
When did you become Jewish, Mom?
I don't know. I just appreciate the faith. I want to read from the Torah.
Edith Bunker.
I just want to read from the Torah.
Edith. Do you sing?
You noticed.
Yeah, I mean, you are rather golden-throated.
Mm.
Have you ever...
Yes, I've done a little bit in the past, but it's always comedy singing.
Comedy singing.
Because I could never bring myself to do it seriously.
Are you a karaoke guy at all?
I used to be. I haven't been in a long time.
Okay.
I think I have allergies or something because my throat is just shredded most of the time.
Has it changed? Is your throat changed? Or
Yeah. Like, I went in and got, like, they shoved a scope in my throat because I thought I had nodules on my vocal cords, and I don't.
Yeah.
And so I have this picture on my phone that looks like a vagina, but it's my throat.
Yeah, but it's your throat.
It's a throat. Okay. It's a throat-gina.
Throat-gina.
And so you can see that my vocal cords are, like, inflamed, and they think it's, like, it's either from acid reflux or, like, post-nasal drip. And so I can't figure out how to solve that. I might be allergic to something that I'm not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just haven't been to the allergist to get poked in the back 100 times to see what my body, you know, there's a lot of steps.
Yeah. I have that too. I need to go to an allergist because my voice has changed a little bit and I'm not hitting the high notes. My upper register is a little.
Me too.
Strange.
Could just be
strange.
Us getting old. That's the other part.
That could be it too.
But I also think that there's probably an external factor, and it's probably diet. It's probably reflux. It's probably, you know,
the cocaine. It's both of us.
Yeah, mounds of cocaine, and the heroin's supposed to take the edge off that, but it, you know, it doesn't always.
They're not always.
And so then that's where the meth comes in. But I think that I was told that if you have allergies and you have postnasal drip, that it can create acid reflux as it drips into your, and so you're just getting it from both ends,
and
it just like burns your vocal cords.
Yeah.
So if anyone's listening who is an allergist or an otolaryngologist, it would be really great to know.
Fantastic.
What the fuck?
I made an appointment to my allergist a couple of weeks ago.
Should we go together?
We should go together.
That'd be really nice.
But they won't see me for another month.
Because it's not like an emergency.
Yes, and because the pollen season's so crazy.
There's so
many people, you know, that have made appointments to get in. Everyone's allergic to something.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know if it's one of the. I don't know enough about it as a discipline. Like, is it an exact science, or are they like, well, I don't know. Try not doing this or being around animals, and then let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, like I just don't know. I don't know how exact it is. And even if they say like, yeah, there's something in the air in Los Angeles that you're just allergic to and that's it. Like, is that it? I don't know. I just don't have the information. So instead what I'll do is self-diagnose online and not go to karaoke. Yeah, exactly. Not go to karaoke.
No, I'm not in red voice.
Because I can't do more than one song now without getting a little raspy.
Right. And you used to do a set of songs. It just hogged up the whole karaoke.
I just refused. They had to drag me off. Somebody had to hit me with a trank dart and just like pull me off.
But no, I had the same. This is like one song and I'm done. I'm like, that's it.
Please tell me what your guy says.
Okay.
Because I feel like it's really interesting to hear that another person's experiencing that too.
Well, I was doing drops under the tongue for a while. I had an allergist that said, here's, you know, do that. And now I had someone recommend that here's another doctor who will give you shots that is supposed to, that has done wonders for this other person. So I'm going to try that.
Okay. See if, let me know.
Yeah, I will. I'll let you know
how it goes. And when you come back, we'll do a musical episode of the podcast.
Ooh. I can't wait, dude.
Cedric is here on the podcast.
Oh, Chris Hardwick. Oh, look at that beard.
I've already read it.
Oh, you're done? It's over?
Yeah, it's over. That was it. That's all I had.
It's like Michael McDonald or Joe Cocker. Or
I used to be able to do a great Michael McDonald. My voice just doesn't hold up for it anymore. Yeah.
Oh,
I can't forget. We're not in love anymore.
You still can do it.
I can't get up to the... Every time I hear,
come on,
how you never want to live a life, how it's gone too far, and you don't have to tell me why. Heaven knows when the game is through, if this is what's real, if this is what's true. Tell me how come I will never be the same again. I can't forget how to end the podcast. Yeah.
Fucking end it.
Okay. Don't say that. Don't say that.
I saw him, Michael McDonald, Chris, it's not that far to paradise. Christopher Cross and Kenny Loggins.
Oh,
at the Hollywood Bowl.
I would have loved to have seen
who
that.
Who opens up for that show?
Oh, wow. I would probably have to be Christopher Cross.
Okay.
I think Christopher Cross opens. I think Michael McDonald middles, and I think Kenny Loggins headlines.
Flip the.
It was the absolute reverse.
No.
Christopher Cross opens.
Yes.
Then Kenny. Then Michael McDonald.
Yes. But Michael came out for "Ride Like the Wind."
Oh, of course.
Yes.
Oh, that's been.
It was
and
great.
I've got such a long way to go.
Such a long way to go.
To make it to the bottom. Now I just think of the SCTV sketch where Rick Moranis like keeps going back in.
Yeah.
Or is it Rick? I think it's Rick.
I think it's Rick. Yeah.
To make it to you go. Great.
Yeah. Good shit.
All right, man.
All right, dude.
It's good to see you,
good
Cedric.
Good to see you, too, pal.
Take care. I hope to see you soon, and I hope you make all these things we talked about.
Okay. We'll try.
That was ID10T number 1018 with Cedric Yarbrough. Now it's time for some word salad wrap. Some words that feel like a salad wrapped in a segment. Word salad wrap. Maybe I should make word salad wrap t-shirts. Would you guys buy a word salad wrap t-shirt? Would you want a word salad wrap t-shirt? I don't know. Send us a note at what are you looking, and then the at symbol ID10T.com. What are you looking at ID10T.com? I just want to share a funny story. I don't know if it's funny, but it's a story that happened. So yesterday, I was trying to get into my to the FedEx website and the FedEx account. And the website kept saying, your password's not correct. And by the way, a website telling you your password's not correct when you copy and paste your password is one of the, that's one of the things that drives me the most insane. I'm like, password sign in, you got one job. I know this is the right password. What are you doing? So I can't get in. So finally I call the 800 number. And talked to a really nice dude. His name was Vincent. He was at the FedEx call center. He was incredibly helpful. Just a really sweet, nice guy. Just one of those things where I was real frustrated with the password experience before. And then this guy was so delightful that I hung up like feeling great. Like, oh my God, what a great, like, I just felt better. I just felt better about the experience and better about myself. So just know that good customer service is appreciated. And so he said, hey, you know, would you mind sticking around on the call to answer a one question survey? And I was like, absolutely. You know, I'm all in. I'm all in on this guy. I'm all in on the call. I'm all in on good customer service. So there's a pause and I start kind of going back into my account, and because I'm multitasking, my brain just starts to drift, and all I hear on the from the automated survey thing is, or press 5. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. this is a number thing. I know I'm supposed to press one or the other. And one number is that I was dissatisfied with the service. And the other number is that I was very satisfied with the service. And I didn't hear which was which because my brain splintered because I was trying to get back on. This is what happens when you try to multitask. People, you can only focus on one thing at a time. So now I start panicking because I'm like, oh, shit. I don't want to give this guy a bad review. I want to give him the best review, but I didn't hear what the options were because I was being an idiot. So I'm scrambling, and I feel like I'm on a ticking clock because then the voice comes back on. Again, press one. And so I go, okay, it's going to give me the options again. But then all it tells you is it doesn't tell you which option represents which. It just says press one or five. So now I'm freaking out because I think, oh, it's just going to hang up on me. And I'm not, like, I really feel the clip the green wire pressure, but I'm not really sure. And so I just hit. I go, well, all right, I guess maybe it works on a traditional scale of one to five. I'll just hit five. So I hit five, and then I hang up. And then I have that moment where I go, shit, what if that was the wrong one? What if I gave this guy an accidentally bad review, and then my mind starts going all these places. Oh, we had such a great call, and if I hit the wrong thing and he gets a bad review, is it going to hurt his job? And is someone going to be like, what did you, why did you get the worst review possible? So I actually called customer service back. Hey, I was just talking to this really great customer service guy named Vincent. Is there any way you could reconnect me to him? No, our call service doesn't work that way. Okay. Just out of curiosity, if I press five for the customer service review, I had the best customer service option, yes? And she said, yes, it was. And it all just sort of drained away, and I felt good. Okay, good. I made the right choice. I gave him a good, I gave him the best possible review. Now, I know all this stuff sounds like super crazy and overthinky and all that stuff, but it's just a great lesson in, number one, focus on what you're doing. Number two, it just takes a minute. Number two, really appreciate people when they, especially customer service, when they give you good customer service, because these folks are on the phones all day long. And if you ever get someone who sounds tired or frustrated, it's probably because they've been yelled at by people all day who know that they're not going to have to be held accountable for treating these people poorly. So remember that too. And then also, you know, take the time to appreciate folks when they're nice or when they give you good customer service or they make you feel better. And go ahead and give them, if there's a survey, take it. What is this, like 10, 20 seconds out of your life? And I know that in our fast-paced world where we can't even watch like 10 seconds of a YouTube video before bouncing to something else, like take the time, because that's an even grander lesson of just breathe. Just slow down, just breathe, just appreciate the moment, and appreciate the people around you who really are, you know, helping you try to make your experiences better. So that is my long, wild, crazy tale from yesterday. So crazy. But I just want to say thanks again, Vincent, for your amazing customer service yesterday. And everyone else, have a fantastic week, and I will see you in your ears real soon. P.S. This is not a sponsored by FedEx ad or anything. This is just appreciation, expressing appreciation for a positive experience that I had. I appreciate you too, by the way. If there was a customer service call to follow you listening to this podcast, I would listen to make sure I knew what the correct options were, and then I would hit the best option, in this case, which I believe is five. So you get a five out of five.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.